From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo talks about his priorities for the next legislative session. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on a conversation with State Comptroller DiNapoli. And a bill has been introduced to legalize recreational use of marijuana in New York. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The new legislative session is just a few weeks away, and Governor Cuomo says he still is making anti-corruption measures a high priority, as he did in 2013, but he says he'll likely deal with economic issues like proposed tax cuts first. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Governor Cuomo tried to get the legislature to enact reforms to the state's dysfunctional campaign finance system. It never materialized. When lawmakers adjourned for the year back in June, Cuomo created an anti-corruption commission using his powers under the state's Moreland Act, and he asked the commissioners to report recommendations before the end of the year. Yet, in a final cabinet meeting of 2013, where the governor and his aides listed the highlights of the year, the Moreland Commission and the entire subject of government corruption received just one sentence from Chief of Staff Larry Schwartz.
To restore the public's confidence, we impaneled the Moreland Commission to investigate public corruption.
The Moreland Commission report, which recommends adopting public financing of campaigns and an overhaul of enforcement at the troubled State Board of Elections, was released with little fanfare on a Monday evening after the 6 o'clock newscast had begun. In contrast, the governor braved a snowstorm to attend the release of his tax commission report on Long Island a few days later.
Welcome the governor of the state of New York, Andrew Cuomo.
The Tax Commission's recommendations were part of a featured presentation by Budget Director Robert Megna at the end of the year cabinet meeting.
A $2 billion tax relief package, $1 billion for property tax relief, $1 billion for business, energy, and estate tax relief.
Cuomo was asked whether he would push early in the 2014 session to achieve campaign finance and other reforms. He said economic issues and tax cutting may at first take precedence.
Obviously, the budget comes first, so you're more emphasis on the economic issues up front. But as usual, I would rather, you know, we'll have fewer, higher priorities that we focus on. But you're up there in the top tier when you're talking about economic development taxes and the Moreland Commission and reform.
Good government groups say there is time for Cuomo and the legislature to work out a reform package very early in January, even before the budget presentation is due in the middle of the month. Karen Scharf with Citizen Action urges the governor to act quickly.
It's now really important that the governor move forward strongly with a set of proposals that the commission recommended, and that the legislative leaders join him in that.
They point out that last year, Cuomo and the legislature agreed to and passed gun control legislation on the very first day of the legislative session, a full week before the budget presentation was even due. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, you had a wide-ranging conversation with the state comptroller this week, Thomas DiNapoli, and one of the things he's concerned about is are these authorities that seem to get away with things that the legislature doesn't.
We know that the New York State authorities, things like the mass transit authorities and the port authority, and which is, of course, New Jersey and New York, have been ways in which the state borrows without having to balance its budget. So the authority borrows. But if the authority goes bust, then New York State has to be the one who picks up the pieces. So it's really a sort of phony thing. We've known it for a long time. Tom DiNapoli, who is the New York State Comptroller and one of my favorite people in public office, has been looking at this very carefully and has had increased audit function himself so that his auditors can look at the way in which money is being spent. But these authorities pay more to their people, and believe me, they get very politicized in terms of the appointments to them. So I think DiNapoli has appropriate concerns about them. Every once in a while, we will see the authorities come under somebody's spotlight as being worthy of inspection. And I do think that with a guy like DiNapoli, he's demanding that the searchlight be shown on them. Of course, since the governor gets to have a tremendous amount of say as to who staffs these agencies, and since the governor and DiNapoli do not always get along, I'm sure that the governor's people, who are very reactive and very sensitive, don't like it when DiNapoli starts to take a good hard look at the public authorities.
To that end, you asked him about Benjamin Losky, the director of the State Department of Finances, and the issue of trying to come in and take over the pensions.
Well, look, I mean, you know, does a bear walk in the woods? I mean, you know, here is Tom DiNapoli. He has this multi-billion dollar pension fund that he has to look in, that he has to run, and it's doing very well. And of course, he's put all kinds of advisors in place and all kinds of checks and balances. He has to, because if it starts to lose money, he's in real trouble. So it's doing very well right now. And everybody in Albany knows about this. Along comes this guy, Losky. And, you know, everybody thinks that what the governor's trying to do is to get control of the pension funds. Well, when I say there's a bear walk in the woods, does a Cuomo who can control all these billions of dollars let somebody else do it? No. And so we're all sitting waiting for the bomb to go off, in which these people, the Cuomo people, headed by this guy Losky, try to take over the pension fund from the controller. It's a very bad idea. One of the reasons that the New York State Constitution created an independent controller was just so that this kind of power didn't get into the hands of one person, particularly the governor. And while we have had some scandal in the past, Alan Hevesy, for example, in which there was a certain pay-to-play that was going on in the controller's office, Tom DiNapoli has proved himself to be above reproach. So I think everybody's waiting for Losky to take a shot, and I know I'll be there on the other side when that happens.
Some interesting comments this week by Governor Cuomo, Alan. He had a cabinet meeting and all the reporters were there, and he spoke about some of the priorities coming for the new session. But one of the things he talked about was money for education, and he kept saying that basically throwing money at the problem won't solve the issue.
Well, look, he wants to make his reputation, Cuomo does, as a tax cutter. The way in which we spend a lot of money in New York State on schools. And there are those of us who think it's not enough. And there are those of us who think, well, you know, some of it could be saved if you combine, for example, school districts. He's right about that. But you want to improve education in New York State. I'll tell you exactly how to do it. You want the best and the brightest people, pay them $100,000, pay them $75,000, and you will get the best and brightest. You will get, in my classes, I have asked over and over again, how many of you intend to go into public school teaching, and no hands go up? And then I say, these are very good classes, very smart kids. And then I say, what if it were $100,000? Every hand goes up. You want the best and the brightest, pay them. We pay our doctors. Is a doctor, there'll be people, doctors who call me about this, and they always do. Is a doctor more important than a school teacher who takes our wonderful children and we put their lives in the hands of these teachers? More important? Nah, come on. So Cuomo is thinking this is one of these situations where it's either or. It's not. It's not. You know, there are lots of things that can be done to save money. Maybe not testing so much. Maybe not paying the testers and the people who put all this stuff together and the people who staff the regents, who I have some issues with. You know, the kind of money that they do. But in fact, this is going to alienate a certain number of people who think that their children are the most important thing in the world, and they are. and the teachers who deserve a lot more support than they're getting, because the perception on the part of the teachers are that this guy's coming after us, that he's stepping on our shoulder in order to advance his political agenda of tax cutting. Well, I don't mind his cutting taxes. Nobody does. But I sure mind the idea that somehow this goes to teachers not getting the credit in the society that they deserve.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A bill that would legalize recreational marijuana in New York State was introduced last week. The measure would regulate the sale of pot and tax it, treating it similarly to alcohol. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports proponents are cautiously optimistic that the governor might see the plan in a favorable light.
State Senator Liz Krueger has introduced legislation to legalize marijuana in the state. The measure would allow anyone over 21 to purchase and carry up to 2 ounces. 18-year-olds could legally possess grass but not buy it. And while the Upper East Side Democrat says current marijuana laws unfairly target minorities, her bill would set a pot tax of $50 per ounce, although it would allow individuals to grow up to 6 marijuana plants at home. Colorado and Washington State have already legalized pot. Krueger, a Democrat, says marijuana could evolve into a $3 billion industry in New York.
Public opinion polls show that the public wants this.
Senate Republicans, who control the chamber in a power-sharing agreement with breakaway Democrats, aren't so sure. Senate GOP spokesman Scott Reif.
We're focused on cutting taxes to create jobs so families can stay in New York.
Manhattan Democrat Richard Gottfried chairs the Assembly Health Committee.
We really should move from our dysfunctional prohibition model to the tax and regulate approach. Marijuana is nowhere near as potentially harmful as alcohol, and our law is dishonest, and that undermines our message to young people.
Gottfried adds that Krueger's proposal is a separate issue from allowing medical use of marijuana under a doctor's supervision, which he has been fighting for. Krueger believes legalizing marijuana would create jobs.
It starts as an agricultural product, and it would be moving through to a retail sales model. So yes, you would create jobs, and yes, you would create enormous amounts of tax revenue.
Gottfried says legalization would send a message to young people.
It's just wrong to try to pretend that it's in a class with heroin, and it would eliminate the really rampant, racially biased enforcement of the law that we now see.
Krueger points out African Americans are far more likely to be arrested than whites, despite similar rates of pot use among both groups. Last year, Governor Andrew Cuomo reportedly supported decriminalizing a small amount of marijuana in a move that would make possession of up to 25 grams of the drug a violation in order to stem those stop-and-frisk arrests in New York City. The governor's office did not return a call for comment, but a Cuomo spokesman is on record characterizing Krueger's bill as a non-starter. Krueger cited a few others in that genre, marriage equality, and the mitigation of the oppressive Rockefeller drug laws.
I could pull out a very long list of bills that were non-starters since I started in the Senate that actually became starters and got done.
Gottfried says Cuomo is free to pick and choose which issues he'll take a stand on and free to change his thinking.
I'm optimistic that the governor will come to see the good sense of allowing medical use of marijuana, and I would hope that ultimately both Democrats and Republicans will come to understand that the tax and regulate approach is also the sensible way to go.
In April, Cuomo emphasized that he is not in favor of legalizing pot, but has told reporters he would keep an open mind on the issue.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The attorneys general from 12 states, including New York and the District of Columbia, have submitted comments to the Environmental Protection Agency calling on the federal agency to cut climate change pollution from power plants. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with an update.
The Environmental Protection Agency is taking comments on a proposed rule to the Clean Air Act to address greenhouse gas emissions from existing power plants. The federal agency failed to meet a deadline set under a legal settlement to set the new performance standards. And in June, President Obama directed the EPA administrator to fulfill her statutory duty under the two applicable sections of the Clean Air Act, 111B and 111D. The Coalition of Attorneys General filed comments earlier this week. New York State Assistant Attorney General in the Environmental Protection Bureau, Michael Myers, explains that Section B requires the EPA to set new standards for new and modified sources, while Section D then requires the agency to set emissions guidelines that states take and decide how to meet.
The purpose of our comment letter was to look at some of the legal issues in advance of this EPA proposed rule. We anticipate that given the importance of this rule and the potential wide-ranging effect, that it probably will wind up in litigation. So we wanted to provide EPA with our thoughts on some of the legal issues, the authority that it has to move forward as it develops its rule.
Vermont Assistant Attorney General in the Environmental Protection Division, Thea Schwartz, says the comments lay out legal requirements the EPA must take as it considers emission limits on power plants.
Existing fossil fuel power plants are the largest single source of climate change pollution in the country. They emit roughly 33% of the nation's total emissions.
Greenhouse gases have not been regulated as hazardous air pollutants. In their comments, the attorneys general list a number of adverse impacts, according to Thea Schwartz.
The effects of greenhouse gases are more heat-related deaths and illnesses, extreme weather, higher smog levels, threats to ecosystems, threats to our food production, and threats to our energy, transportation, and water resource infrastructure.
Michael Myers adds that the harms are significant and well recognized.
Why EPA has not previously moved forward with regulation, I think, is somewhat a complicated answer, but I think we are certainly happy that the agency is moving forward, and now that we know they are moving forward, we think that they should set stringent emission limitations, but at the same time give states the flexibility to choose how to meet those.
States have implemented programs such as renewable portfolio standards, requiring electric generators to obtain a certain percentage of their power from renewables. Cap and trade systems like the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative have been formed. Energy efficiency programs and closing aging power plants have also been required by states. The Adirondack Council has participated in the carbon auctions of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. Spokesman John Sheehan notes that the EPA did move earlier this year to regulate carbon from planned new power plants, but did not act regarding existing plants.
The cleaner fuels and more efficient pollution control technologies that are needed to control climate change will also help to reduce the emissions of sulfur and nitrogen that cause acid rain in the Adirondacks. So we would actually, for a change, get a double benefit here from a regulation that affects everybody.
The attorneys general submitting comments to the EPA were from the District of Columbia, California, Connecticut, Delaware, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Links between workers and the Goodyear Chemical Factory in Niagara Falls and high rates of bladder cancer were established back in the late 1980s. So far, there have been 50 confirmed cases from the workplace resulting from exposures to carcinogens. As Innovation Trail's Matthew Leonard reports, the long latency period for this form of cancer means that many former workers are still dealing with the dark legacy of their time at Goodyear.
You know, the guys used to joke to me, they'd be like, man, Goodyear has been good to you, Harry. They gave you a wife, because that's where I met Diane. You have a father-in-law that you worked for. And you know, another thing you got at Goodyear was bladder cancer. So, you know, you got everything.
When Harry Weiss started work in 1977,
Goodyear had been making chemical products at its Niagara Falls plant for 30 years. One of them, Nalax, is shipped out to factories in the form of black chunks and used as an additive in tire making. One of the key ingredients in Nalax is a yellow fluid called ortho-toluidine. Goodyear's biggest supplier, starting around 1957, was DuPont, who manufactured ortho-toluidine at a plant in Mississippi. Steve Wodka, a lawyer who sued DuPont and other suppliers on behalf of 24 former Goodyear workers, says the company knew ortho-toluidine was a potential bladder carcinogen by 1955.
However, DuPont didn't issue any warning about the potential carcinogenicity of ortho-toluidine until 22 years later, in 1977.
It'd be another 13 years before any changes were made to protect workers at the Niagara Falls plant. A team of epidemiologists from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH, was called into the plant in the late 1980s by the Oil, Chemical and Atomic Workers Union. The OCAW had been raising the alarm over ortho-toluidine for a decade or so. By then, the union knew of at least 8 cases of bladder cancer, but NIOSH uncovered more. The researchers zoned in on Department 245, where the ortho-toluidine was used. The fluid was pumped into chemical reactors from a tank farm outside the building. NIOSH found chemicals leaking from pipes and valves, pooling in open areas, presenting plenty of opportunity for workers to be exposed to bladder cancer carcinogens. Steve Markowitz, now a professor in occupational and environmental medicine at Queen's College in New York, was part of the study.
There was little attempt to protect workers, and it was a pretty primitive plant, frankly.
In 1988, Harry Wiest moved full-time to Department 245 as a maintenance worker just before the NIOSH study. He doesn't remember seeing any safety warnings on the ortho-toluidine used in the plant.
Back in the day, we just wore our regular street clothes.
Well, no, you had clothes set aside for work. I washed them, right. But they weren't clothes he would wear to go out anywhere. He had jeans and T-shirts that he just wore to work. But
and then Goodyear started supplying us with
uniforms.
With uniforms, yeah. But I
when
can't.
When did they do that?
I can't remember when that was.
But by the time Goodyear started providing personal protection equipment, like chemical barrier suits, it was too late for Harry Wiest and for Diane's dad.
But I remember me and Diane watching him go through this, and I'm like, boy, I don't ever want to get that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and that, how ironic that I got it too.
Harry Wiest's diagnosis came in 2004. His doctor caught it early because of the spate of other cases from the plant. His father-in-law rode out 2 bouts of bladder cancer and survived. In another case, a worker exposed to ortho-toluidine at a factory in New Jersey died. The long latency period for the disease means it's very likely there'll be more cases to come from the roughly 1,800 people who worked at Goodyear Chemical. Steve Markowitz.
So let's say they begin work at the plant age 18, 20, 22, and it would be most likely they wouldn't develop bladder cancer until their 50s or 60s.
Goodyear insists it's used effective industrial hygiene at the plant for decades now and does pre- and post-shift urine screening to measure levels of ortho-toluidine in its workers. Walker says that's not enough and that there needs to be definitive action from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to impose stricter limits on exposure to ortho-toluidine.
We have so much information now from the Goodyear plant that we can show that exposures of 5 parts per million, which is the allowable level for workers in the United States, will cause bladder cancer.
In Rochester, this is Matthew Leonard.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1351 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.